How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez and Dave Meltzer here on Wrestling Observer Radio. It is June 5th, 2012, here at figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. Lots of news to talk about today. We had Raw and the announcement that next week's show is, in fact, a three-hour Raw.
Well, that actually was announced a long time ago.
Actually, that was a show that was originally going to be a draft.
It was the second show that was going to be a draft.
Mm-hmm.
You remember the first one was going to be in April, and then if they were going to have a draft, it was going to be this one if they were going to do it. But I think that you know, what's the purpose of a draft when people appear on both shows all the time and it doesn't really matter?
There's no point.
Yeah, so.
Well, let's talk about this show. It was built around John Cena versus Michael Cole. Why? Well,
I'll tell you why. It's the react. The whole thing is the show tonight was a reaction to last week's rating. I mean, if you look back at the show, with the exception of the Punk match, there was almost nothing that like really built any storylines or anything like that. I mean, it was just if we put John Cena against Michael Cole, who everybody hates, and you know, strip him to his underwear, we can get a big, you know, we can keep the audience and do well. And I mean, it's and again, those things usually work, but it's like one of those things where, you know, yeah, you can do it.
It's a Band-Aid.
I mean, exactly. What do you prove? But you know, they don't want to do it. They didn't want to do it in their 2-7, and they weren't going to anyway. But this was, and the Vince coming back. I mean, it's all reaction. You do 2-7 rating, and you know that it shakes people up, and especially in WWE, and this is what we got.
I don't want to say that like last week's rating wasn't horrible or anything like that, but for Christ's sake, when you look at the competition they had and the overall television viewership for the night, this was like an irrational freakout to me.
Well, I wouldn't disagree with you, but it was still a terrible. You know,
it was still a terrible number. But how many one
second lowest you know number for a regular show in 15 years? It's a pretty terrible number.
But how many weeks have we seen a terrible number that ends up followed by a normal number or a abnormally high number?
This was probably going to follow up with a normal number because there were a bunch of reasons why. You know, there were two very obvious reasons, which were the NBA playoffs and the Hatfields and McCoys, that were going to hurt that number. And they probably, instead of doing a 2-7, would have done a 2-9, which is still not
great,
a good number. But you know, 2-9 to 3-1 is what they do now.
Yeah.
For the most part.
So now what we got this week was a Band-Aid. We spent a whole show building up John Cena and Michael Cole, and Michael Cole got stripped to his underwear. And
maybe of because they were so afraid of getting another 2-7.
Yeah, but what is this? I don't understand. Like, let's talk about this show. Well, we'll get into it as we talk about it. It opens up with Cole in the ring to talk to Cena about the whole Big Show thing. Cena does a little bit of comedy. They banter back and forth. John Laurinaitis ends up coming out, and he announces that Big Show isn't here, but John Cena, to be a fair man, I am going to give you the opportunity to choose an opponent for tonight. Choose anybody. And
But it can't be John Laurinaitis.
That's right.
He's retired.
He's retired after his victory over John Cena.
However, do you know that John Cena and John Laurinaitis actually wrestled in the dark match?
Oh, yeah, and he's going to be wrestling on house shows as well.
Yeah.
I think he said he retired from singles competition.
He retired from singles competition, that's right.
That's right. So that does, well, anyway. So Cena.
He's in like a motorized cart, but he's still doing matches.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that I can believe because he's a heel. He doesn't really need that cart, but he's riding it around to attempt to get sympathy.
Yeah, whatever.
Anyway, John Cena ends up choosing Michael Cole because Cole had buried him earlier.
Now, you know that Michael Cole is also retired.
That was the story.
Michael Cole retired a long time ago. Remember, he retired, like, whatever it was after, I don't even remember what it was. He retired after WrestleMania that year so he could be undefeated at WrestleMania.
My wife, who does not watch any wrestling whatsoever, during this segment happened to be watching because we were eating dinner. And Michael Cole had stated that, "You can't touch me, I'm an announcer." And then 2 minutes later, John Cena chooses Michael Cole as an opponent. And she goes, how can he choose him? He's not allowed to touch him.
Wasn't that point made that he wasn't allowed to touch the, that they
That's
weren't allowed to touch the announcers anymore?
I remember
that one.
Yeah.
Okay, now I got one for you, being that I can't even keep track of this stuff anymore. I remember this television show where Vince McMahon was crying and whimpering.
Yes.
And Triple H, like,
he'd been removed from power.
That's right. Okay. So now explain that he's coming back as the head of the company next week. I mean, I know that he wasn't, you know, there was some convoluted thing. Again, Triple H was removed from power, but he came back and he still had power. But John Laurinaitis was still in charge, and I don't get any of this, on, you know, when I think about it. I don't want to think about it, but if you, like, actually think about it, like, when did Vince McMahon get power back?
I think they just forgot, or they presume we forgot.
Okay. Well, that's, you know, that's not very good storytelling.
That is, I don't want to say it's the least of our worries, but it's nothing.
It's actually not the least of our worries. It's actually pretty significant.
Well, I don't know. I don't really consider it significant, to be honest with you. Nobody
well,
pays
wait a
any
minute,
attention.
Wait a minute. That's the whole. It's like we're watching a television show, and you're telling me that the fact that the stories make absolutely no sense is not even significant. I mean, that's the whole basis of the show.
Well, that's what they've taught me. None of this shit matters. So quit worrying
about
it.
I know it taught me that too. That's why I'm not offended by it or anything like I would have been, like, you know, 20 years ago when I'd go, wait a minute, he was fired and now he's back in the same position, and I've never had an explanation why. Or maybe I have, but it was so subtle that I forgot it, which is even worse.
That's very likely.
Yeah, but geez. Okay, well, what was it then?
I don't know. Someone will email us tomorrow with an explanation that...
When did he get put back in power? Like, when did he, you know... He's been on TV since, hasn't he?
He has been. I don't remember for the life of me.
Yeah.
So Michael Cole ends up getting signed against John Cena, even though John Cena's not allowed to touch an announcer, and he begs John Laurinaitis to ixnay the match, and Laurinaitis explains that his job is being evaluated next week. He must give the people what they want, and the people want Michael Cole versus John Cena. So the match is on. We had Sheamus beat Dolph Ziggler. Dolph is now, at this moment, a singles wrestler, and he goes in there and he loses clean. And I was baffled.
They just decided that since it worked out so well on Friday, they might as well just do it again.
I just don't get it. I don't
get
it.
They need a guy who can work, and, you know, right now, look, they weren't going to beat Sheamus now with Randy Orton suspended.
So don't have him wrestle Ziggler. Have him beat Jack Swagger. How about that?
There's nothing wrong with that.
Well, instead, he beat Dolph Ziggler. So for those of you that wanted to take Dolph Ziggler seriously, sucks to be you. Don't hold your breath. We had Otunga.
He was I'm trying to think. I mean, yeah, he just beat him with a brogue kick. He was doing that brogue thing, which it's like that's like the third person to do this, and it never works. And he tried it before. Wasn't he doing this like a couple months ago, where he did it for like a week or two, and it didn't work?
I think the fans have to start the chant, and then you lead them after they've already started it on their own. Like with Daniel Bryan, everybody's chanting yes, right? Well, that's different. He did start it, but it caught on, so go with it. This is not catching on. And by the way, Alberto came out and gave Sheamus the armbar as Sheamus is hanging off the ramp. And Dunn beat him up real good, as they'd say.
That was good stuff. That was really good. That was one of the better things on the show, I thought. You know, just...
Although, I do have one complaint about that segment.
Yes?
When Ricardo Rodriguez is the one that got Sheamus off his feet with a double leg takedown, that made Sheamus look like a dork.
I guess. Yeah, I guess you're right.
It's just the announcer. Well,
but it was like misdirection, though. It wasn't like he came face to face and just like shot.
It was. I thought he would sneak up behind and like give him a low blow or something like that. Instead, he used technique to take him down.
Well, I thought that's fine. You can still do that. It was still from behind,
I guess. So Otunga told Laurinaitis Vince is coming next week, and that's that.
Hey, was Eve Torres on the show?
In a replay, but nowhere else.
Okay. I don't know, but it just kind of occurred to me that she was been running around on all these shows, and she wasn't really much on this one.
Sin Cara beat Unico. It's fine. Sin Cara's best opponent, obviously.
The new thing on Sin Cara is that he's being billed as the most popular wrestler in the history of Mexico. And I, you know, aside from the fact that he's not, and on the last tour, he was the third most popular wrestler on the tour, but I almost think that, like, when they do that, like, they're trying to appeal to more to Mexican fans with this than anyone. And doesn't that like slap them in the face?
It does.
That's how I felt when I heard that. It was like, you're slapping me in the face, because it's like anyone who knows anything about Mexican culture knows about El Santo. So it's like yeah, okay, to the Americans, they don't know El Santo, but Sin Cara is being there for the Mexicans, and they all know him. And by saying that, you're just, it's like saying, you know.
It would be like if we lived in Japan and we watched New Japan every day and they brought in John Cena and claimed he was the most popular wrestler in the history of the United States.
But only if you were playing to the American public. Like, if you know what I'm saying?
Sure.
It's like if we lived in Japan and say that, it'd be like that. But if it was a show, but if it was like a guy brought in to draw American fans, so that doesn't really exist in Japan. It's more like if they brought Mystico in and told us that he was like more popular than El Santo. I mean, it's just if it wasn't such a culturally significant guy, I don't think that it would be such a big deal. But in that culture, I mean, let's face it, that guy's, you know, bigger than anyone, you know, in the history of that culture, with the exception of probably five people. Forget about sports figures and wrestlers. You know, it'd be like saying, God, I don't know. It would be like saying that,
Elvis.
It'd be like saying that Richard Nixon's the most popular president we've ever had in our country. And we probably wouldn't even be, that's not even a good analogy because anyone in this country knows that, like, but he wasn't, though.
That was a poor analogy.
Okay.
But I think we all understand what you're saying.
Yeah, I just thought, like, if it was something else, like if it was, like, somebody from England and they said, like, I don't know. I mean, I guess you couldn't say William Regal, but like,
I think your best analogy is still Sin Cara and El Santo.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. It's the thing. If it wasn't for El Santo and Mil Máscaras and Blue Demon, you know, I mean, he was really popular there, and he was a really big draw. I don't know that he was any. You know, I don't know that he was any. I don't know if he was. He was pretty big. I mean, he wasn't. I don't think he was bigger than El Hijo del Santo or Conan or Vamp or anyone like that. I mean, but he was pretty hot for a couple of years there. But I mean, like all of those guys, you know, Conan, Vampiro, and all them. I mean, none of them are even in the league with Santo or even Blue Demon. So it's like, and again, everyone in Mexico, it's like everyone of Mexican heritage knows those names. So it's not like the United States where you go. You know, like John Cena is the most popular, and you go, oh, Hulk Hogan, Steve Austin, Bruno Sammartino. And the kids don't really know that because they're not really, you know, I mean, I guess they do know Hogan.
I think the kids would know Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, kids know Hogan, but it's still not the same thing. I mean, Hulk Hogan isn't close to El Santo in culturally. I mean, it's not even in the same stratosphere. I mean, it's like comparing, I don't know. It'd be like comparing Muhammad Ali to David Tua or something. I don't know. It's probably another bad analogy.
How about if you brought in Nogueira and said he was the most famous jiu-jitsu practitioner in the history of Brazil?
Okay, but who? But Elio Gracie's not even close to El Santo.
Well, no, but still.
I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying, but it's still not the same thing. It'd be like, you know, again, it'd be like comparing somebody to George Washington in our culture, you know, like, you know, someone that like everybody knows.
Anyway, Sin Cara won.
But I think, you know what, my Nixon thing wasn't really that bad. now that I think about it.
So Sin Cara beat Unico with this thing.
Jesus Christ. No, yeah. I thought to appeal to Mexican people. I mean, that's what I mean. It's kind of like when WWE is like really culturally stupid in certain ways about going into other countries, you know, or like they'll do something like, you know, like with a Japanese wrestler, and then they'll talk about Chinese food or something, you know, which is okay because it's in our country and, you know, it's whatever. But when they go to their countries and they're stupid, see, this is the deal. It's like you're trying to get this character over, and you're so stupid you don't realize you're slapping the face of the people who you're trying to get him over to by saying that. If you say he's one of the most popular, no one's going to, that's fine, and that'll work. But by saying he's the most popular, you've gone and insulted everyone. So anyway, that's my point.
We had Ryback beating Stan Stansky.
Stan Stansky and Arthur Rosenberg.
Yeah. The actual names they use on the indie scene, Kirby Mack and Stony Hooker.
Those guys took good bumps.
Be worse than the names they used on this television show, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a high backdrop that was
Did you get all the inside jokes?
Oh, the genius gimmick?
Yeah. They went out there and they were doing the poem thing, and they announced him from Downers Grove, Illinois, which is Lanny Poffo's hometown.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Stan Stansky for Stan Kroenke, you know, because Vince still has that grudge.
Oh God.
Yeah, I mean, you remember that grudge from a couple of years back?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know the Rosenberg. I'm sure there's something. There's a story there, but I'm not privy to it.
So Ryback won, obviously. Double Samoan
drop. Yeah,
he
destroyed him. Same exact match he does on SmackDown every single week. Double Samoan drop.
Kane beat CM Punk. We had a bunch of...
Hey, did forget it. I don't even want to go to Ryback. This is like not the week for Ryback.
No. Kane beat Punk. We had AJ down there. We had Daniel Bryan down there. We had AJ arguing with the referee about interference, and then Bryan yelled at AJ, and Punk hit Bryan with a tope and walked into the ring and got chokeslammed and pinned. And long story short, afterwards, AJ's in the ring, and Kane takes a gander at her, and she's trapped. She's trapped in a wrestling ring. And so she ends up giving him the eye.
No, you missed. Bryan tried to save her.
He did. He got chokeslammed too. But the point is, she's trapped
but
in a ring.
But the point is like he said he didn't like her, but he tried to save her and got beat up in the process.
Well, maybe just saw an opportunity to attack Kane, whose back was turned.
That's not how I saw it.
We're supposed to see this many different ways, such as when she gave Kane the eye and then he left her alone.
Yeah. So now all of a sudden she knows that like she's a hot girl and she can manipulate guys.
And she tried to manipulate Josh afterwards
so in fact,
as well.
She's graduating from being a nut job to being to playing all three of these guys.
Mm-hmm. And Josh.
Yeah. I wonder if that has to do with Linda McMahon's campaign.
Oh God.
No, think about it. Think about the timing of it.
A powerful woman?
The idea of... because it's not the woman who's the nut job, it's the woman who's doing the manipulating. Because of the things in the papers this last week with the women with, about how they exploit women.
I think you're the only person in the world that put that together.
I may be the only person to put it together, but think about Vince McMahon this week. What's Vince McMahon been thinking about this week? You know what it's been.
I mean, unfortunately for the theory, she has been building to this for months now.
This campaign's been going on. No, she's not necessarily this spot.
Well, no.
No, I mean, this spot all came from today. She was just a nut job on Friday night.
Well, they pretend she was a nut job today after the Josh thing. Lawler was making cuckoo noises.
She was a nut job being manipulated. Now she's a nut job manipulating everyone. She wasn't manipulating anyone before. She was the one being manipulated.
Hmm. We had Kofi and Truth beating Kurt Hawkins and Tyler Rex, and they just beat him. Not much.
They were
to
all
it.
Taped up from selling the injuries from last week.
Yeah, and then we had Cena and Cole with Laurinaitis coming out and saying it would be a no disqualification match if John Cena could beat this man, and this man ended up being Lord Tensai. Or just Tensai, I'm sorry, who came out and put him over pretty big until Cena made his big comeback and beat him. And
there's nothing wrong with this match. Tensai was fine.
Tensai looked way better than usual here.
Well, it's because he did a real match. You know, where he hasn't looked good is doing squash matches because all that time in Japan he was doing back and forth. And so he did a back and forth match and he was just fine. It was also good. It was with Cena and there was a purpose, so the crowd was kind of into it too, so that helped.
So then Cena had his match with Cole and beat him up, chopped him, poured JR's barbecue sauce on him, forced him to apologize to Lawler and Ross and stripped off his pants and sprayed him with a fire extinguisher. And suddenly out of nowhere, Tensai ran in and hit a tree slam. And Cole crawled over for the cover. Cena kicked out. Tensai vanished. And then Cole tried to use the fire extinguisher and Cena hoisted him up, hit the FU, got the pin. And that is how the show ended. So I guess we'll see what the future is for Tensai. I figured this was the end, but then he came in and gave
Yeah, when he came back at the end, I don't think that's the end.
Yeah, the tree slam at the end suggests he is going to be back. So,
yeah.
3 hours next week, Dave. I'm not ready for this.
Yeah, no, I know. And it's I'm not looking forward to 3 hours either.
Are you ready to do this show another hour later because of this?
Please. I don't want to be up another hour.
This is bad news.
Yeah.
Maybe the rating next week.
You know, if it's like 1 3-hour show every now and then, there's nothing wrong with it. But it's like a preview of something that you dread.
Well, maybe the rating next week will suck, and then they'll give up on the idea of going permanently 3 hours.
Yeah. Do you notice that like both of these companies are like well, I mean I mean here's the thing. Okay. With TNA, I get the idea. They're opening with like the Dixie Carter interview to explain that cliffhanger thing, because they're trying to establish a time slot. And I guess WWE in July will be trying to establish a time slot. But the idea that Vince is coming back next week, and he's doing the performance review of John Laurinaitis, not at the end of the show, but at 8 o'clock. So the point is he's going to do it when like everyone forgets to tune in. Because, well, again, they did mention a couple of times on the show. They didn't mention one-third of the amount of times that Mike Tenay mentioned that they were starting an hour early on Impact the week before. And look at what happened there. So, you know, I mean, they're opening with a 2-5 quarter, you know, most likely. And anyway, so I don't know. When they do that, I guess on Tuesday when Vince sees what his quarter did, unless Vince is on like every segment or comes back on the last segment as a good number, Vince may be in a really bad mood again. So who knows what they'll do the week after? Maybe Michael Cole will have to wear girl underwear or something.
No. We've also got on Impact the contract signing with Bully Ray and Joe Park.
Yep, and a 6-man tag with Angle and Styles and Sting against Bobby Roode and Kazarian and Christopher Daniels, which good action match. And match 4-way for the women's to determine who's going to face Gail Kim on the pay-per-view on Sunday.
Yeah.
So no use hurrying that one.
It was announced today that UFC's next video game will not, in fact, be put together by THQ. It is now EA Sports. They have purchased the license from THQ, which does not sound good for THQ. And this is...
It's not good for THQ. It's really not good for UFC either, but no one's going to say that right now. But it's really not, because if that license was if the UFC video game was knocking them dead, THQ would have... You know, THQ wanted to divest himself of something and pick up some quick cash because they had some cash problems. So they decided that this is the one to sell. You know, I mean, it probably came down to this in WWE since they were both at the same level. And they felt that obviously they made the decision that WWE had more power, had more juice going forward, which I think that 2 years ago in the same situation, that would not be the decision they would make. But this year, that's the decision that they made.
So this is, of course, the same EA Sports that a couple of years ago, I presume not the same management, but the same EA Sports.
It is new management, yeah.
That Dana White buried. Boy, did he not like EA Sports a couple of years ago. But
oh, yeah, because, well, number one, in like 05 or 06, when they went to EA Sports, after they had just gotten on Spike for this video game thing, and EA Sports, I don't know if they really laughed in their face, but I remember talking to Dana, and he certainly gave me the impression that, in his mind, they laughed in their face. I mean, it wasn't like, you know, like they had negotiations and they didn't come to terms or anything. It was like they laughed in his face. You know, it's like they told him that you're never going to amount to anything. And I don't think, I'm sure they didn't use those words, but that's how Dana took it. And then, you know, a couple of years later, they go in there and they want to get in, but THQ's got the license, so they do the EA Sports MMA one game, which from all I heard, and I saw it when it first started, the original demonstration at the convention. You know, it was Pride and Strike Force and basically all the fighters and Randy Couture. But, you know, it was built around Randy Couture and Fedor Emelianenko. And the game bombed. I heard it was a great game, but it did not sell. So now they got the main characters and they've got the UFC license and they can use what they've already built for that. That's kind of like the prototype of where they're going and... You know, I would guess that they probably won't release that game for a while, and they may go with like alternate years with the boxing game and one year the boxing game, and the next year the UFC game, and like that every other year type of a release schedule. because they kind of determined THQ, you know, that 1 year interval wasn't enough, and even 18 months was pushing it. So that may be what they do, or they maybe they'll go annually. I don't know.
The Manchester Journal Inquirer is this story. Where to begin? They're having a battle with WWE, and tell the story.
WWE strategically lashed out without thinking, and now it's blown up in their face.
And Linda's face.
Linda, I mean, you know, here's the thing. I don't believe for a second that Linda McMahon found out about all this reading a clipping in the newspaper, you know, about them threatening to sue Chris Powell, who's a reporter for the Manchester Journal Inquirer, who said that Linda made her money through, you know, violence, pornography, and whatever the third one was, bad taste or whatever, raunch, general raunch, or probably, I think was the words, something to those effect, that effect. But she claimed that, like, you know, she didn't know that they threatened to sue that guy, the WWE threatened to sue that guy, until she read it in the newspaper. And, you know, she's being, you know, like, all the reporters there are just, you know, feeling that was like an insult to their intelligence to even claim that, given the person who green-lighted that letter was Vince McMahon. And one would think if, like, Vince and Linda were talking at all, that it would probably come, I don't know, you know, it's like, I don't know, put it this way. If you were, this is a bad one, but
oh,
I'm going to try anyway. Okay. If you were going to sue somebody, okay, I mean, you were, let's say you were whacked out of your mind, and you hated somebody like really, really bad, and you were going to sue them, and it's a stupid idea, okay? Now, for better or worse, your wife's going to know about it, right? I mean, is there any possible way, if you were going to sue somebody, that your wife doesn't know about it?
It's unlikely.
No, I think it's like, I actually kind of think about it, I'm thinking it's like impossible. And that's what all the reporters think. No, it's impossible. So, anyway, she's, you know, she's trying to not get their, whatever it is, I don't know if it's, you know, their thing that backfired, she's trying to keep it off of her, and it's not working very well. And then the Manchester Journal Inquirer has filed a claim to the Federal Election Commission that the WWE is, you know, basically violating election law by threatening to sue reporters on behalf of Linda McMahon. And I do believe that they will skirt around this one by saying, no, we're trying to protect our company's name as their reason for doing it. But just the fact that they went out there to like intimidate and scare all these reporters, and they end up being, you know, having an investigation by the Federal Election Commission right in their face for doing so, and having like all of these reporters like laugh in their face about the threat of a lawsuit when they were supposed to be scared. It's not, you know, I don't think this worked out the way that they expected it would.
Well, that is undoubtedly true.
Yeah. And, I mean, the one thing I think that's the positive for Linda McMahon is that it's happening now. Because if this all like went down in October, I just think that it would just, you know, she'd be kind of like a laughing stock in the latter stages, and you know, all the candidates would make fun of her. And right now, like, the Republicans aren't making fun of her because nobody really wants to get in this fight right now. It's not the dirty time of the thing. By the way, the WWE also has asked her opponent Christopher Shays to apologize for the remarks he has said about the company. And he hasn't apologized either. So they're threats and to get people to apologize. You know what? Maybe that's where the Michael Cole thing comes in. Who knows?
That's right. He was forced to do all these apologies.
Yeah. Because nobody would apologize to them in real.
Let's jump into some of the questions here.
So anyway, let me think about this. So what's going to happen this week that we're going to watch on the screen on Monday night?
Well, perhaps this will be determined by the WWE TNA lawsuit hearing.
That's another one. Yeah, they were talking today. They were supposed to have the big hearing on Monday, a week from today, in Knoxville. But one of the guys that's supposed to be at the hearing is John Laurinaitis, who has to be at Raw on Monday. So that's kind of like WWE is claiming that they need more time.
I love that they got a head of talent relations that has like real job responsibilities, but he's busy playing character on television. It's too busy.
So he can't show up for a lawsuit hearing.
Yeah. No wonder developmental sucks. Explains a lot.
That's another issue.
Next thing you know, they're going to have McDivitt on television every week, and then they'll be...
Don't say that. That's going to be the next one, is make McDivitt a TV character.
That's right. He won't have time to solve any of their legal issues, and they'll really be in trouble.
Yeah, they'll bring McDivitt out for like a fake lawsuit against Otunga or something.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
All right. Who will be blamed if the Vince segment on Raw next week draws a poor rating?
Listen, I will guarantee that if he's in the first segment, it's not going to draw a good rating.
They're going to blame Laurinaitis.
It's not happening.
You know what so they'll do? They'll have Punk make an appearance, just in case.
Yeah, that may happen, too. No, I mean, as far as, like, if the overall show does a bad rating, they'll probably blame the writers. But that's, I mean, Vince is like, you know, I mean, Vince made the call to put himself in the first segment, so he can only blame himself at that point.
This person here says, good question, actually, what is the purpose of an interim champion? Connett won the title, and then is likely to wait 8 to 10 months to face GSP. I thought the purpose was to defend the fake belt until the champ was ready.
Yeah, in theory. I mean, just a timing issue. I mean, if the thing is if the champion's not going to be able to defend for a year, then they are usually going to create an interim belt. I mean, and there's no hard and fast rule. They create an interim belt when they want to, and they don't when they don't. They had a championship match scheduled on that show, and so they just wanted a championship match, just like this July match. You know, they want, and I, you know what? They should have in the case of both cases, because you had guys that are going to be out for like 9 months to a year. So I mean, yeah, should Condit probably have fought one more time? Yeah, but you know, he was going to fight Diaz. The only reason, it's not that he was refusing to fight; it was because Diaz fell apart. And once Diaz fell apart, there was really no big money opponent. And at that point, you know, from the Condit standpoint, like if he was going to fight Diaz and they were going to make it worth his while, and they were going to, and he'd agreed to the fight, so that was going to be like, you know, around August. Then it, you know, that was the original plan. It just fell through, and at this point for Condit, it's like, okay, who's he going to fight? Johnny Hendricks just fought, so Johnny Hendricks would be a couple months down the line, so it doesn't even fit timing wise. Martin Campman just fought, so that doesn't make sense timing wise. Or else, if he did that defense of the belt in 3 or 4 months, then he wouldn't be ready for GSP, and you'd have to delay GSP's return for a couple months, and that's not what they want to do. They want GSP for Montreal. So it's not that like they're not defending it. It's just that's how it worked out. And so if the plan was for him to, in February, you know, win a fight and then sit on the sidelines for, you know, 10 months, you know, and wait for GSP, yeah, it probably wasn't a good idea. And that's the same thing with Faber and Barao, in the sense that you know, whoever wins is going to face McDonald most likely. You know, as long as McDonald's hand heals before Cruz ever comes back anyway. So yeah, it's to keep the title in play as opposed to icing a championship for a year. And you know, a year is too long to ice a championship. So I don't got a problem with those. With those decisions, you know, with the interim titles. I mean, if you're going to have a champion out for a year, you need something in play, or else everyone's just sitting there doing nothing.
This person says, I'm watching the Clash of the Champions DVD, and at the end of Funk Flair, I Quit, Luger breaks up a brawl, attacking Sting and Flair. Gary Hart turns on Funk. Flair goes after Hart. Muda attacks Flair. Sting makes a save. I know Luger a few months earlier has programmed a Steamboat, but what is the scoop on his constant turns around this time? What were the plans? Were they building Luger to feud with Sting before Sting tore his ACL and Sting's title reign being delayed to the Bash? It's a bizarre amount of events for one wrestler to be turning so often during the time period.
Well, I think that was to do a couple things. Number one, it was to like retire Terry Funk as a babyface because he became a television announcer at that point. So that's why Gary Hart turned on him. And then the to get Flair and Luger and all them, they were building towards that Iron Man thing at Starrcade where they had, I think it was Sting, Flair, Muda, and Luger, you know, all wrestling each other at Starrcade for that Iron Man championship. So I think that's what that was all about. But as far as Luger, I mean, Luger did the turn, and Luger was going to stay heel, and there was no plan to turn him back at any time. But when Sting tore his ACL, they panicked and said, oh, my God, we need a main event for February. Let's turn Luger, which I thought was a bad idea because, see, you know, it was a panic move to, you know, it was a panic move because they had a pay-per-view that, you know, because the February pay-per-view was supposed to be Sting against Flair, and Sting was supposed to go over for the championship in Greensboro on Flair's birthday, no less. But Sting tore his ACL, so that's out of the question. So Luger got the shot because they didn't have confidence in any other babyface to headline. The problem was that when Luger turned, the way that turn was, he almost had to win the title on the turn, going back babyface, or it would be like kind of like flat. But the other problem was that they had promised the title to Sting. So Luger winning the title and then losing it back, and then Flair losing it to Sting, that'd be three title changes in quick order. That would have weakened the Sting, the big Sting win. So that's why Flair fought that. Whereas the company was, you know, once they put Luger in that position, they did that screw job finish in February. But then all of a sudden it was like, well, we got to get that title on Luger or we're going to kill Luger, you know. So they wanted to get the title on Luger at a house show, and Flair was just like, I promised I was going to lose it to Sting, and that was a big fight with Flair and Hurd, you know, because Flair wanted to build up the Sting match to be the biggest match, and Sting was still supposed to win the title, but they didn't know how they were even going to get there because they didn't want Luger to win it and then lose it back to Flair and then Flair to Sting by that point either. They just wanted Flair to lose the title because they just, you know, they had like this thing that, you know, at the end of 1989, they had some people in management who believed that the reason they didn't draw well in 1989 was because Ric Flair was on top, and the thing that they needed to do was remove Ric Flair from the top position, and that was the key to the company, was to build around Sting and Luger because they were younger, and and that was going to be the main feud, was Sting against Luger, and Flair was going to be in semi-mains or whatever, you know, but not the focal point of the company anymore. And then Sting went and got hurt, and so it was just a you know, by this point it's like, we got to get this title off Flair. He's killing the company, you know, not realizing that the minute they got it off Flair, that's when the company went down, because frickin' Luger and Sting at that point in their career, neither of them knew how to do a championship interview, and you know, you could argue they couldn't do a championship match either, but that. The interview was probably in those days more important, and as far as selling the title and everything like that. But they, you know, with their infinite knowledge of wrestling, they didn't understand any of that. So, anyway, that's the long story on what happened. But it was just a lot of things that weren't really thought out, and they kind of panicked and turned Luger. And you know, I mean, there was thought, you know, don't turn Luger, put Pillman in there, just let Flair beat Pillman. Have good matches, and then, you know, then you go to Sting when Sting's ready. And that was talked about, you know, but they just figured Pillman wasn't strong enough at the time, and he wasn't, but sometimes, you know, maybe sometimes, you know, rather than ruin Luger, or, you know, when the time went for Luger to come back and turn, you know, and then they end up turning Luger back heel again, whatever it was, a year, you know, some point later. I think it was, 91 or something? So, but yeah, Luger turned a million times, and that certainly hurt him.
All right, one more here. This person says, what are the Mighty Wilbur and Al Perez doing these days? I remember.
Oh, I have no idea. I haven't heard Mighty Wilbur's name in 100 years.
Oh, my God.
And Al Perez's name I hear every now and then, but I don't know what. I have no idea what Al Perez is up to either.
You haven't been following the career of the Mighty Wilbur, Dave?
God, you know what? I haven't even thought about Mighty Wilbur in since the 80s or whenever it was that he was around.
All right, well, let's do one more here then. Why are U.S. promoters so hesitant to have a heel win clean? How did this all start? If they're trying to make the product seem real, although I know they're not, wouldn't the favorites lose just as much as the heels?
Yeah, it just evolved that way, where the idea is that if the heel won clean, he becomes a babyface, so therefore he should never win clean. And you know, there's times for everything. I sense that really got stronger in the probably in the late 70s. So it's been going on for a long, long time. You know, from that point, it was, you know, as far as like main event baby faces and heels, when the heel would have to win, it was almost never clean. Whereas in the early 70s, when it was time for the heel to win, the heel would win. And sometimes he would cheat to win, and sometimes he would be dirty and win, but it would be a win, as opposed to, you know, like, you know, the heel has to hold the tights. And, I mean, it was... It's the mentality. If he's not doing that, then you're either not protecting your baby face, or the heel is you know, it just became the thing. And I don't know that it really. I mean, I thought that every situation calls for something different. Sometimes the heel should win clean, and some heels just didn't want to. I mean, Flair never wanted to win clean. Harley Race, you know, really didn't want to win clean. When Harley Race would go somewhere and the promoter would say, like, you know, beat this baby face clean, he would always grab the tights because in his mind he was protecting the baby face, and that's what he would do. And Flair obviously was, you know, took that kind of thing, you know, learned from Harley and even made it stronger, because Flair always, you know, wanted to put the other guy over so big. That was just how Flair wanted to work. And so it became real hard. I mean, I remember, like, Flair and Luger at the, Starrcade 88. I mean, that 30-minute match in Norfolk. I mean, Flair, I know Flair was supposed to win that match clean. That's all he was told. I mean, like, and that was Jim Herd, you know, his doctrine, because when that whole shit went down with Flair and Dusty and Rick Steiner and everything like that, and, you know, Dusty tried to book Flair to lose the title in 6 minutes, and then, you know, Jim Herd panicked because Flair was getting mad, and if Flair left, the whole Turner thing would fall apart, because Ted, you know, the only wrestler who Ted even knew was Ric Flair, so if he lost Ric Flair, he would be really furious, so they had to keep Ric Flair. And then Jim Herd just said, this, you know, Flair and Luger had been feuding, and Flair had never beaten Luger, And Jim Herd, you know, just overruled Dusty and just goes, no, you know, Starrcade's going to be Ric Flair against Lex Luger. This actually, you know, the funny thing is, I'm saying Jim Herd, and it was actually all Larry Matisick, you know, because he called up Larry in a panic. What do I do? What do I do? And Larry goes, well, Flair's been working with Luger. He's never beaten Luger. Starrcade should be Flair and Luger, and Flair wins clean. Oh, how do I do it? You're the boss. Say that's what it is. Okay. So he goes in there and says, Rick, you got to win clean. Rick goes, okay. And then Rick, you know, I think Rick still grabbed the trunks, even though he's supposed to win clean or whatever he did.
Well, that's clean for Ric Flair.
Yeah, but, I mean, it was supposed to be clean. It wasn't supposed to be, you know, the ropes or the trunks or whatever he did after 30 minutes. It was supposed to be 30 minutes, you beat Luger, because we want to establish you as the world champion in this new company that we're starting, as opposed to this guy who always cheats to win. And Rick just wouldn't win that way. You know, and you know, when you're in the ring, I mean, that's the one thing with those guys, you know, that in those days, I mean, it wouldn't fly so much today. I mean, Rick would probably still do it because he's Rick, but that's because he's from a different generation. But these guys today, like, if these guys today, like, you know, if Vince tells them you're going to do this, they're going to do it. You know, they're going to do it exactly how he says, unless they're, you know, unless it's Triple H who can get away with it. But I mean, all these guys, whatever he says, they're going to do. Whereas in those days, you know, if it's Dusty or Ric Flair or Harley Race or those guys in the promoter says, okay, you're going to do it this way, they're going to go, okay. And then they're going to do it, you know, exactly how they want to do it and not how the promoter says, because it was more of a star-driven business in those days. That's just how it was. I mean, I'm not saying one way is better than the other. You know, if I was a promoter, I'd certainly like it better when the guys actually didn't do what they wanted and did what you told them. But that's, you know, those guys had, I don't want to say they had more balls, but they had more leverage, so they did what they wanted to do more. You know, they did what they wanted to do a little bit more. That's all.
All right, everybody, we are going to wrap it up here for today, but got a lot of stuff coming up, including New Observer, New Figure 4, a bunch of new radio shows. Got a lot of stuff coming up in the next couple days. We'll be back Wednesday night, Dave and I, for more. So check it out, and we'll talk to you again after a while.